Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast that is exclusively available to you as a Circle member. These episodes are a deeper dive down the holistic trauma healing rabbit hole. You will find yourself challenged, empowered, inspired, and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. But remember, we're getting to the root of how trauma has affected every aspect of your existence, and that's not always quick or easy. By being part of the Trauma Healer Circle, you are already consciously creating your best possible reality and weaving a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. I'm so honored you're in my circle.
Hello, Circle members. Welcome to your second bonus episode for February 2022. I am recording this right before I leave to take my son to Mexico for his 18th birthday. He turned 18 on February 17th, and holy shit, it's surreal. I don't know any other way to describe it. It's surreal. And it's not as some of his other birthdays from whenever he was younger felt more like milestones. Like I remember his 5th birthday feeling like a really big milestone. His 12th birthday was definitely a big milestone. I know this birthday is a big milestone too, but it just feels different somehow. It feels, because he took total responsibility for planning what he wanted to do. Like he texted his friends. He decided that he wanted to invite his friends over to play Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons for the day. And I was like, what do you need from me? And he was like, just get us some pizza for dinner. But otherwise, like he didn't need anything, and not needing to throw him a party or plan some big shindig or something like I would have done to celebrate those big milestone birthdays. But it was just really cool to watch him take the reins and plan for himself what he wanted to do. If you hear any background noise, it's because I am recording this on the day of his birthday. And he has 6 friends here right now, and they're hanging out upstairs. And our house is small. I'm down in my office with the door closed, but I can still hear them being very loud upstairs. So if you hear any teenagers screaming or laughing in the background, that's what that is. Anyway, we are headed to Mexico on Sunday. This is his birthday present from David and I. It's a mother-son trip to Cozumel. And Ryan and I are going to go snorkeling at the Palancar Reef. And we're going to go see the Mayan pyramids at Chichen Itza. We're going to take the ferry across and go to Playa del Carmen and Tulum. We are going to swim in the ocean. We're going to lay on the beach. We might rent some jet skis. We're going to eat some food. And we're just going to have some bonding time and what I hope will be a really healing time for us. So I needed to get this episode to you because we're going to be gone for a whole week. And by the time I get back, it's going to be the 1st of March. What I want to talk about today is something that you have heard me talk about probably since you started following my work. And it's, I want to share my experience with a healing protocol that I've been on since March 6th of 2020, so nearly 2 years, and it's called the Nemecek Protocol. I first learned about the Nemecek Protocol in March of 2020, and I heard about it from a food blogger colleague of mine. Her name, Linda, and her food blog is called The Organic Kitchen. And Linda and I were food blogging colleagues, and so we would bounce ideas off of each other. We followed each other on social media. We discovered that we had a lot in common over the years, and she became a really good food blogger friend and colleague for me. And then whenever I started struggling with my mental and physical health, Linda would send me just encouraging messages, because her biggest symptom of her autonomic nervous system was insomnia. And the insomnia that I experienced had nothing on Linda's insomnia. Mine was like 5 months of 2-3 hours of sleep a night. Hers was like 25 years. And somehow she had still managed to build a successful food blog and become a certified yoga teacher and a food photographer. And she's just this amazing woman. And how she did it on 20 plus years of insomnia, I will never know. She doesn't even know how she did it. But she did. And she had tried everything for her insomnia: sleeping pills, supplements, diet changes, sleep hygiene, blue light blockers, like all the things that we all have tried whenever we've dealt with insomnia. insomnia. And what she actually learned about the Nemecek protocol because her granddaughter had been put on the protocol following some really bad vaccine reactions, where literally overnight after her granddaughter received a couple of vaccines, like overnight she woke up the next morning and she was different. And her parents were just completely terrified. She was set back developmentally. She was no longer speaking. And prior to these vaccines, she had been bilingual because one of her parents is French and one of her parents is American. And so they were speaking both French and English to her, and she had been bilingual, and she got these vaccines. And then the next morning she woke up and she wasn't talking anymore. She was like banging her head against the wall and hurting herself. She was throwing tantrums like crazy. She regressed a lot developmentally. And her family was just so concerned because she wasn't herself anymore. She was like 3 years old and she wasn't herself anymore. And so they found out about the Nemecek protocol and they started her on the protocol, and her results were just incredible. And so when Linda heard about it and learned that it wasn't just for kids with developmental delays, that it could also be used in adults who had symptoms of autonomic nervous system dysfunction, such as insomnia, Linda decided to give it a try. And then whenever I was struggling with insomnia so badly, she told me about the protocol and I was like, I have nothing to lose. I've already tried everything else, so I might as well give this a shot. And that's how I learned about the Nemecek protocol. I started the Nemecek protocol on March 6th, 2020. And that was actually one day shy of the 1 year anniversary of my suicide attempt. So the suicide attempt was on March 7th, 2019. I started the Nemecek protocol on March 6th, 2020. And when I started the protocol, my symptoms were insomnia, anxiety, brain fog, heart palpitations, food intolerances, dizziness when I stood up, low progesterone and PMS, salt cravings, asthma, allergies, varicose veins, low sex drive, pelvic floor dysfunction, and frequent urination. So that was my laundry list of symptoms. And at the time, I knew that insomnia and anxiety and stuff was connected to the nervous system, but I had no idea that all of these other things like dizziness when you stand up and heart palpitations and low sex drive and varicose veins and asthma and allergies, I had no idea that those things were part of the, under the jurisdiction, I should say, of the autonomic nervous system. So I read Dr. Nemecek's book. I was immediately like, this makes so much sense. I have to do this protocol. And the protocol involves four aspects. So the first two aspects are taking oils that are very anti-inflammatory for the brain. So it's high doses of olive oil and high doses of fish oil. The third component of the protocol is vagal nerve stimulation. So I have this little device that plugs into my phone and I clip it onto my ear, and it sends an electrical pulse to stimulate my vagus nerve. That helps to promote healing. It promotes neuroplasticity. It helps to calm the nervous system down. And then the fourth component of the Nemecek protocol is the occasional use of an antibiotic called Rifaximin. And of course, that requires a prescription. So if you're interested in starting the Nemecek protocol, the first three components, the olive oil, the fish oil, and the transvagal nerve stimulator, are all things that you can get started on your own without your doctor's help or approval. However, if you're going to use Rifaximin, which is necessary for the complete protocol, and I'll explain why later in this episode, then of course you have to have a prescription for that. So you'll have to have your doctor on board. And that's probably where you're going to run into the greatest challenge. Thankfully, I have an amazing relationship with a fantastic psychiatrist, and my psychiatrist has walked with me through two benzo tapers and insomnia and all the things that I've gone through over the last 3 years. And whenever I shared with him about this protocol, he was very open-minded. I sent him the research. I sent him some photos of pages from Dr. Nemecek's book. I sent him some links to some studies. And I was like, I really want to try this protocol. And he said, well, what do you need from me? And I said, I just need you to write me a prescription for Rifaximin. And he was like, you got it. So my psychiatrist actually wrote me a prescription for an antibiotic, which I think is crazy because not usually within the scope of the types of prescriptions that they're writing. But I'm so grateful that he trusted me and that we have the rapport between us, and he knows that I'm going to advocate for myself. And I was very clear in the beginning when I started working with my psychiatrist that I was like, I am a nightmare patient. I will question you about everything. I will challenge your authority. Don't even try to be an authority with me because I think that's complete bullshit. I don't think more than me about my own body. I'm going to challenge you. I have weird genetic mutations that mean my body does not process medications in the same way as most people's bodies do. So you're going to have to work around that. And I don't want to need psychiatric medications for forever. So I really just need you for your prescription pad is basically like what I told him. Okay, got it. And we've had a really great working relationship, and I still see him usually a couple times a year just to check in. Even though I'm not on any psychiatric medications anymore, he still continues to prescribe Rifaximin whenever I need it. So those are the four components of the Nemecheck protocol: high doses of olive oil, high doses of fish oil, transvagal nerve stimulation, and the occasional use of an antibiotic called Rifaximin to rebalance gut bacteria from small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So now I want to give you a little bit of the history of the Nemecheck protocol. Obviously, it was developed by a man named Dr. Nemecheck. His name is Dr. Patrick Nemecheck. He used to be the chief resident at UCLA and then later became a clinical instructor for the Department of Medicine at UCLA. So he's not a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor. He is a legit, like, run-of-the-mill, conventional medical doctor. In 1994, he opened an HIV treatment and research facility, and he started working with HIV patients when there were no diagnostic tests and no treatments and no answers. And that was like the early part of his career. And he had an innovative approach to the complexities of the HIV disease. He authored or co-authored 72 scientific abstracts and publications. He participated in 41 different clinical studies. And in 1999, he became a founding investigator for the HIV Research Network. As he was working with HIV patients, he discovered that even though he was able to get his patients to leading stable and normal lives, that sometimes they would just strangely start to die from sudden cardiac events. And as he began to learn more about this and started to develop and purchase technology to help figure out why these AIDS patients were like managing their disease but suddenly dropping dead of heart attacks, he came across the field of autonomic medicine. And this is when he realized that the failure of the brain sets in motion the failure of the body. So as he continued his research in metabolism, immunology, and the autonomic nervous system, he eventually opened his own practice so that he could begin to treat adults and children with autonomic nervous system dysfunction. He realized that many of his patients were suffering from early stages of disease and autonomic nervous system dysfunction, like heartburn, headaches, and fatigue, and that they also had small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, which can cause intestinal distress and food tolerances. And if these adult patients had children, then he noticed that their children were also experiencing symptoms arising from their autonomic nervous system dysfunction, such as anxiety, ADD, autism, and digestive issues. So he started using all of the available scientific and medical tools to start to try to induce the nervous system and the organs to repair themselves. This included normalizing and reducing inflammation, inducing natural stem cell production, and reactivating restorative mechanisms in the body. And as the years passed, Dr. Nemecheck began working with professional athletes whose brain symptoms resolved, especially if they had concussions. And he developed Autonomic Advantage, which is a brain injury recovery program. He also found that the key to the treatment and reversal of many common diseases affecting people today is to reverse the dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system in combination with the renewal of stem cell production and neurogenesis through the reduction of metabolic inflammation. I should have mentioned at the beginning that this podcast is going to have a little bit more of a scientific bent than most of my episodes do. And his treatment approach is really effective in the recovery of autonomic function from a variety of neuroinflammatory conditions, including traumatic brain injury, concussion, post-concussion syndrome, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, chronic depression, treatment-resistant epilepsy, autism, developmental delay, Asperger's syndrome, and sensory and motor disorders. And in 2016, Dr. Nemechek filed a patent application to protect his new formula that's now known as the Nemechek Protocol. And in response to his unique expertise in the autonomics and development of his protocol, he renamed his practice to Nemechek Autonomic Medicine. And his book, which I highly recommend and I will link to in the show notes below, is called The Nemechek Protocol for Autism and Developmental Disorders, a how-to guide for restoring neurological. Obviously, I don't have autism or developmental disorders. I am an adult. I am not a child. But this protocol isn't just for children with autism or developmental disorders or delays. It's also for anyone who lives with the symptoms of a dysregulated autonomic nervous system. So just real quick, let's just go over what the autonomic nervous system is in case you've missed that in my work somehow. I'll just make this really fast. So your autonomic nervous system is like the master command central of your entire body. So everything automatic that your body does that you don't have to think about or make it do is controlled by your autonomic nervous system. So that includes things like your digestion and your elimination, your circulation, your heart rate, your respiration, your immune system function, your sleep cycles, your hormone production, all of it, everything that you don't have to think about, your autonomic nervous system is taking care of. And autonomic nervous system dysfunction looks like the chronic and mysterious illnesses and symptoms that a lot of people are trying to treat with restrictive quote-unquote healing diets and supplement protocols and energy healing and functional doctors and naturopaths and all of that. You're basically like throwing supplements and diet changes at something that you're never going to fix with supplements and diet changes because it's the nervous. So your autonomic nervous system is the master communications network. It controls everything in your body that you don't have to think about. And it also encompasses almost everything that goes wrong when our bodies aren't working automatically, perfectly, like we're designed to do. Your autonomic nervous system controls every organ in your body. It controls large functions like your heart rate, bladder function, your adrenal function, your thyroid function, your blood pressure, blood sugar, but it also controls smaller functions like pupil dilation and hiccups. And your autonomic nervous system also coordinates your emotions and how intensely we react to stressors. You have two main branches of your autonomic nervous system, your sympathetic branch and your parasympathetic branch. The parasympathetic branch is often known as the rest and digest or feed and breed state. That's the state that most people say is the quote good state to be in. You have a second branch called the sympathetic branch, which is where the fight flight response lives. So that's the mobilized nervous system that mobilizes your body to either fight the threat or run away from the threat. Of course, you also have a third sub-branch of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your social engagement system. And this was introduced back in the 90s with Dr. Stephen Porges and polyvagal theory. I don't want to go into that here, but basically, your autonomic nervous system malfunctions because of short-term and long-term processes that create inflammation in your brain. So I'm going to be talking a lot about brain inflammation in this episode, which is really relevant to my work because reducing brain inflammation is necessary for healing the nervous system. And of course, you can go to therapy, you can do somatic experiencing, you can do shaking, you can do breath work, you can do cold plunges, you can do all of these amazing body-based tools and practice nervous system hygiene to help regulate your nervous system. But if you're not also addressing the brain and the inflammation in the brain due to trauma, then the picture is incomplete and you will likely find yourself still on that hamster wheel of wellness or of using nervous system regulating tools when actually all the breath work in the world, all the cold plunges in the world are not going to reduce actual inflammation in your brain. So trauma, most of us don't know this. I didn't know this whenever I started my research. Excuse me. Trauma causes actual brain, and numerous studies have been done and have found that trauma changes the structure and chemical activity of the brain. Trauma impairs emotional and behavioral function of the brain. It decreases the size and connectivity of certain areas of the brain. And trauma even enlarges the amygdala, which is the fear center of the brain. So when your autonomic nervous system malfunctions because of these processes that create inflammation in the brain, you have three things that happen. One, inflammatory cytokines increase. And inflammatory cytokines are chemicals that are released from white blood cells, and they change how other cells function. Another thing that happens whenever the brain has inflammation due to trauma is that white blood cells in the brain that are normally very soothing and calming and anti-inflammatory, they're called microglia, they become what is called primed. And basically when microglia become primed, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So one of them is great, anti-inflammatory, soothing. Then there, it becomes primed and it's very pro-inflammatory. Holy shit, we have a fire in the brain. These microglia are becoming primed. And then the third way that there is brain inflammation is bacterial overgrowth in the gut, which is also known as SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And in Dr. Nemechek's research, he found that the breath test, which is usually a test that's given to diagnose SIBO, is not indicative of the presence of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. That even if the breath test is negative, a person can still have an imbalance in the gut bacteria. And I love Dr. Nemechek's explanation of SIBO. He breaks it down very simply. And essentially, SIBO is, if you think about your small intestine and your large intestine, you have two completely different biomes in the small intestine and large intestine. The bacteria that are present in the small intestine are different from the bacteria in the large intestine. SIBO happens when the bacteria in the large intestine, which he calls the fish, swim upstream and they start hanging out with the bacteria in the small intestine, which Dr. Nemechek calls the birds. So SIBO is when the fish swim upstream and they land and they're trying to swim around and fly around with the birds. That's what SIBO is. So the rifaximin, which is part of his protocol, that's the gut rebalancing part of the protocol. And rifaximin is this incredible antibiotic. It's actually more accurately called a eubiotic, E-U-biotic. It's incredible because it's not like your typical antibiotics like amoxicillin or Z-Pax or Keflex or stuff like that. It's incredible because it only kills large intestine bacteria that are in the small intestine. It doesn't kill small intestinal bacteria. It doesn't kill large intestine bacteria in the large intestine. It only targets the large intestine bacteria, the fish, when they're swimming around in the small intestine with the birds. So I have taken, I think at this point, I've taken 7 rounds of rifaximin in the nearly 2 years that I've been on this protocol. And I've shared before, I usually have really weird reactions to medications. I have strange side effects. Sometimes medications don't even work. And if they do work, then I typically will have like weird things happen in my body as a result. And I have not experienced a single negative side effect from rifaximin. In fact, whenever I take it, I can't even really tell I'm taking anything other than whatever symptoms other than whatever symptoms that had started to creep back in, which is how I know it's time to take another round, is when some of my symptoms just start to pop up randomly and it doesn't seem to make sense, then I know, oh, okay, there's probably some gut bacteria imbalance and I need to take another round of rifaximin. Today, actually, I started taking another round of rifaximin, and it's a 10-day course of this eubiotic. You take two 550 milligram pills per day for 10. And I started it today, February 17th. And the last time I took a round of rifaximin was back in September of 2021. So nearly 6 months between rounds, which is the longest I've gone between rounds ever since I started this protocol, which tells me that my body is holding on to that healing and sustaining it for longer. The longer I do the protocol, on top of continuing to practice my nervous system hygiene on a daily basis. So I mentioned that the brain becomes inflamed because of short and long-term processes that create inflammation in the brain. So I want to share some of the short-term and long-term processes that cause this brain inflammation, because I promise you it's going to surprise you. Most of us think of brain injury as being something that's caused by something like a concussion. And it is, it absolutely is. But other things can also cause brain inflammation besides concussions. And that includes surgery, general anesthesia, vaccine reactions, bacterial or viral infections, bone breaks or fractures, pregnancy, childbirth, and physical or emotional trauma. And then long-term events that cause brain inflammation are things like probiotic use, excessive omega-6 fatty acids in the diet. Omega-6 fatty acids are the types of fats that are found in seed oils and vegetable oils. So things like soybean oil, like Crisco, peanut oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, those types of things. Those are omega-6 fatty acids. Alcohol consumption is another long-term event that causes brain inflammation. Developmental trauma, so those of us with childhood trauma, vitamin D deficiency, smoking and secondhand smoke, low-grade dental infections, and chronic infections like hepatitis or HIV. This is where I want to talk about how non-physical injury or non-physical events can cause injury and inflammation in the brain. And this is a quote from Dr. Lisa Shulman from the Journal of Cognitive and Behavioral Neurology. She says, "Traditionally, investigations have focused on how physical trauma affects the neural circuitry of emotion, cognition, and behavior. The effects of emotional trauma on the same neural pathways have received less attention. Compelling advances in stress neurobiology and knowledge of brain injury at the macroscopic, microscopic, biochemical, and molecular levels call for a redefinition of traumatic brain injury that encompasses both physical and emotional traumatic brain injury. Conceptualizing a spectrum of traumatic brain injury with both physical and emotional causation resolves the irreconcilable tangle between diagnostic categories and acknowledges their shared systemic effects due to hormonal and inflammatory mediators. Recognizing emotional traumatic brain injury shifts the interpretation of emotional trauma from a confound to a comorbid related cause of brain injury." So, yes, that actually means that when you have experienced an emotional trauma, a death, a divorce, a chronic illness, a sick child, filing for bankruptcy, poverty trauma, whatever it is that it causes you emotional distress and trauma, that event can create brain injury in the same way that a conk on the head can create brain injury through a concussion. Pretty fascinating, huh? So Dr. Nemechek introduces a really fascinating concept to this emotional traumatic brain injury that he calls cumulative brain injury. So earlier, whenever I was mentioning those short-term and long-term processes that cause brain inflammation, so the short-term things like childbirth or a vaccine reaction, anesthesia, a viral infection, a bone break, physical trauma, or emotional trauma, those are the short-term events. And then the long-term events like the probiotic use, the excessive omega-6 fatty acids, alcohol, developmental trauma, vitamin D deficiency, smoking, infection, stuff like that, that when we experience either of those things, either because we don't live in a bubble and because we are humans that have a variety of life experiences and challenges and struggles that we face, we don't just have one thing happen. You don't just have a shitty childhood and then you grow up and the rest of your life is great. You don't just have a childbirth and then nothing else happens. So we have all of these things happening that's creating inflammation in the brain, and he calls it cumulative brain injury. So it's if the way that normal brain recovery works is, let's say you get a concussion, your brain function goes down a little while, while your brain is recovering and healing from the concussion, and then your brain function returns to normal. And then maybe your parents get a divorce, so that causes another injury in the brain, and your brain repairs itself, and the microglia work, and they're pruning things and making things happy and anti-inflammatory in the brain again. Brain function returns to normal. You're going on about your life a little bit more. You have, let's say, a surgery. For a temporary time, you've got some inflammation in your brain. You may not even know it because you may not have symptoms, but your brain is able to repair itself and return back to normal function. When you have impaired recovery of your brain due to primed microglia and inflammatory cytokines, then your brain doesn't go back up to normal after one of these traumatic events. So you get the concussion, your brain function is impaired for a little while, and as it heals, rather than going back up to full function again like before, it doesn't go up as far. And then your parents get a divorce or something else happens and you get another brain injury, and then the repair is less. It goes up a little bit, but not all the way back to the baseline that it was at before. Then you have that surgery, your brain is injured again. So it's instead of a zigzag line that equally goes up and down, it's like a zigzag line that goes down, then up a little bit, then down really far, then up a little bit, then down really far, then up a little bit. So it's steadily going down even when there are moments of recovery. I hope that makes sense. He has a chart in his book that makes it much, much easier to understand what I've just described. And actually, I will put the image from his book in the show notes below because that will probably make it way easier for you to understand what I'm talking about. And here's what he says about cumulative brain injury. This is a quote from his book. Cumulative brain injury is an almost invisible process because the type of injury causing the permanent damage, like minor head trauma on the playground, the death of a loved one, the divorce of your parents, and common vaccinations, have historically been understood to be harmless in the long run. You go through life experiencing these events, thinking that although unpleasant and difficult, you will fully recover and get on with your life. But as time goes on, you may begin noticing that you are developing some physical, emotional, or medical issues that you did not have before the injury or traumatic event. And I want to pause right there because that sentence is what made the light bulb go off for me. That's when I realized that I could trace back the development of my symptoms to their beginning on or around the time when I was going through a really stressful event. So I was having cumulative brain injury for years because of various physical and emotional traumas, the short-term events, the long-term events, all of those things. And my brain was not fully recovering from each of those injuries. So over time, the overall function of my brain and of my nervous system was declining. And I can go back and I can be like, oh my gosh, after that event, that's when I started having really bad anxiety. After that event, that's when I started having panic attacks. After that event is when I started not sleeping. Like I can go back and I can look at it. And that's what that sentence right there is what made the light bulb go off for me. So I'll continue. So he says, as time goes on, you may begin noticing that you are developing some physical, emotional, or medical issues that you did not have before the injury or traumatic event. You may start becoming a little more anxious. Notice your headaches are more frequent or that you are now experiencing lightheadedness. You may notice your digestive system in response to food is changing. Eating seems to result in heartburn and constipation. Then your blood pressure and blood sugar numbers are rising, and you're placed on a variety of medications to control these conditions as well as your other symptoms. You wonder how you caught these medical problems. They seem to have come out of nowhere without any explicable reason, and due to the building inflammation in your body, each new brain, physical, emotional, and inflammatory trauma now results in a growing amount of chronic dysfunction and damage to the autonomic nervous system and other areas of the brain. So hopefully just what I just shared is really validating if you have those chronic and mysterious symptoms. And I would challenge you to maybe make a timeline of when your symptoms started, when they popped up, or when they got worse, and coordinate that with what was happening in your life on or around that time. And that might feel really validating to see that those emotional events that you were going through, even though they're over now, your body and your brain are keeping the score. And sure, you can use nervous system regulating tools like the breath work and the cold plunges and shaking and all of that to help to process and discharge some of the stored energy from those traumas. But you also have to be addressing the brain as well. And of course, there is a gut-brain connection. And I'm not here to dispute the gut-brain connection. I just think there's been way too much emphasis placed on gut health and not enough emphasis placed on inflammation in the brain. And it's the inflammation in the brain that causes the autonomic nervous system to malfunction. And of course, the bacterial imbalance in the gut can create inflammation in the brain as well, which is why we have the rifaximin that we use to treat the SIBO. However, you can't just take the rifaximin for the SIBO because that's still not enough to soothe those primed microglia and inflammatory cytokines that are still in your brain. So I'm hoping that this is making sense. And I have no way of asking you if it is. If you have questions, just email me or post in the forum if any of this isn't making sense, or just get Dr. Nemechek's book and I will link it in the show notes below. I hope you can also understand how a lot of our culture blames aging on some of these things that are happening in our bodies, because we do tend to experience more and more of these symptoms as we get older. Like, older people experience a lot of heartburn or indigestion. Older women tend to have like migraines and hormonal imbalances. Like, most of this stuff, unless you had severe, you know, developmental delays or things like autism or epilepsy as a child, most of these things just stack one on top of another as we go about our lives, if we're quote unquote normal, healthy adults and we don't have like a disability or a congenital disease or genetic anomaly, birth defect, like things like that. So for me, I don't have any of that stuff going on. I'm a quote unquote norm adult person, but the longer I've gone in my life, it would be easy for me to be like, oh, this is just what getting older means. It means I have heartburn. It means I'm constipated. It means I have hormone imbalances. It means I have hot flashes, varicose veins, allergies, asthma. Like, these things just happen as we get older. That's what our culture says. That's what Western medicine says. But Dr. Nemechek says no. And he's given me the courage to say no too, that sure, our bodies age and things break down as we get older because we're all dying until as soon as we're born, we're dying. But we can have a level and a quality of health when our brains are not having to deal with all this inflammation that trickles down and causes dysbiosis in the gut, as well as the other symptoms of autonomic nervous system dysfunction. I want to read another quote from his book that kind of describes how when our autonomic nervous systems aren't functioning optimally in the beginning, we don't really notice, or we shrug it off. This is just part of life. Like, I'm getting older, or yep, my mom started having hot flashes when she was in her 40s. So that must be why I'm having hot flashes. It's genetic. We give genetics way too much credit, in my opinion. But here is a progression, and I just really what he says in this. So I'm going to read it from the book. Early autonomic dysfunction in adults includes high blood pressure, sleep apnea or insomnia, and cerebral blood flow issues that leave them with ADD, dizziness, brain fog, memory problems, and anxiety. Today's young adults and children are also experiencing a great deal of autonomic dysfunction. They are increasingly unable to heal from concussions. They have gastrointestinal and digestive trouble, and they are developing ADD, ADHD, autism, and anxiety. Learning the signs and stages of autonomic dysfunction may help you finally get to the underlying cause of your medical issues and provide a framework for you to regain your health. Improving and reversing autonomic dysfunction is important for people of all ages, because when the autonomics malfunction long enough, the resulting metabolic inflammation will ultimately help to turn on someone's genetics for disease. Combining my 30 years of internal medicine expertise with autonomic nervous system analysis and an in-depth understanding of cell function and inflammation, I have developed treatment methods for preventing, reducing, or reversing acute and chronic autonomic nervous system damage. So that right there tells me that the longer we go on as a culture with chronically dysregulated nervous systems, with trauma, we have kids. When we don't know how to regulate our nervous systems and heal our trauma, we enact it on our children, most of the time unconsciously. That perpetuates the cycle, but that also causes them to have brain inflammation. So this is tied into ancestral or intergenerational trauma. When you choose to heal your nervous system and your brain, you are choosing to heal your ancestry. You're choosing to heal the generations of crap that have come before you that your ancestors didn't know how to heal because they didn't have the resources to heal. It's really difficult to have the emotional capacity to parent a toddler throwing a temper tantrum when your own nervous system is frazzled and frayed and your brain is dealing with inflammation. So you're more likely to lose your temper, which causes you to maybe hit or spank or yell at your child, which does what? It creates trauma. So this is how these things perpetuate themselves. It is physical, it is emotional, and it's also ancestral. And when we can look at it through that holistic lens, instead of trying to divide it into categories, when we see it as a big picture, to me, it makes so much more sense than dividing it into categories. Let's just look at it as a whole thing. Let's look at families as a whole picture. And he even says that improving and reversing autonomic dysfunction is important for people of all ages, because when the autonomics malfunction long enough, the resulting metabolic inflammation will ultimately help to turn on someone's genetics for disease. So even he is not placing a lot of emphasis on genetics. Just because your family has a history of mental illness or heart disease or diabetes or something like that doesn't mean you have to. It may mean that you have to take better care of your nervous system and your brain to avoid those things or to not turn on those genes. But just because it runs in your family doesn't mean you are going to be predisposed to it or even have it, depending on how you're living your life and how you're taking care of your brain and your autonomic nervous system and, of course, your gut. But I think that's part of taking care of your brain. So Dr. Nemechek also breaks autonomic nervous system dysfunction into 5 stages. So in stages 1 and 2, we don't have noticeable symptoms, but there are preclinical changes in brain function. And he has a technology called a spectral analysis autonomic testing that allows him to identify these subtle changes in brain function. But most people aren't coming to him in stage 1 and stage 2 because the symptoms aren't noticeable. So then they come in usually around stage 3. And at that point, people are experiencing symptoms in their daily life. So they're experiencing things like the heartburn, headaches, dizziness, excessive hunger, thirst, anxiety, sexual dysfunction, poor sleep, all of that. Their progression of their autonomic dysfunction also brings blood pressure issues, heart rate issues, things like POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, sleep apnea, immune system problems, hormone problems. And he notices that people in stage 3 and above autonomic nervous system dysfunction don't bounce back from illnesses or injury as quickly as they used to. And this is the stage when we start seeing things like chronic pain and chronic fatigue. And then as the autonomic nervous system function declines, and inflammation is rising in their brains and bodies, then their symptoms can become mental and emotional in nature too. So that's when we see things like anxiety, panic attacks, depression, postpartum depression, and PTSD. Then as things get worse in stage 4, multiple systems in the body are malfunctioning and people are feeling increasingly worse. So this is when like blood pressure and blood sugar is harder to regulate, even with medications. Hearts, immune systems, and hormone systems begin to malfunction. Anxiety and depression increase. People at this point need a lot of medications to manage anxiety, depression, blood pressure, immune system, hormones, stuff like that. And there's just an avalanche of brain and body dysfunction. People with weakening autonomic patterns can have low heart rate variability, and their symptoms typically disrupt their daily quality of life. And then finally, stage 5, this is the worst autonomic nervous system dysfunction. The most advanced is things like diabetic autonomic neuropathy, cardiac autonomic neuropathy, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, sudden cardiac death, ALS, things like that. The lower stages that you're in, the faster you're going to heal and the more likely it is that you're going to heal. However, Dr. Nemechek has seen that even people with diagnosed Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease on his protocol do improve over time. And I feel like this is so promising and it needs to be talked about, because as I'm 38 years old, I'll be 39 in May, and I'm at the age now where if my parents are going to start having these types of issues, memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, like those neurodegenerative diseases, it's going to start happening at the age that I am for them in their, like they're in their 60s now. I'm in my almost 40s. So it's going to start happening for them in the next few years if it's going to happen. So I can look at that and I can start planning for myself and I can be like, I don't want that to happen in my body, and my parents don't have the resources or the interest in healing their nervous systems and reducing the inflammation in their brains, but I do. So it's possible that I might not be able to prevent it for them unless they're interested in this protocol, but I can prevent it for, those are just things that I'm like, I'm keeping my eyes and ears open for, just knowing that like my parents are getting older and I'm going to be entering the stage of my life where it's possible that I might have to take care of my parents in their older ages. And I'm really glad that I have this information, because if my parents are ever, God forbid, diagnosed with an illness like that, then hopefully I have a resource that can help them. Ideally, I wish that both of my parents would be on the Nemetschek protocol now, but alas, they are not interested. But anyway, I still think it's interesting to talk about, and it's always good to have that awareness in the back of our heads. So I have so much more that I could say about the Nemetschek protocol, my experience with it, and what it does, and how truly miraculous it is. I really hope that this protocol becomes more mainstream. And I think with Dr. Nemetschek being more of a conventional or allopathic doctor and not like a natural doctor, I think that probably gives him more credibility with conventional medicine doctors. So they might be more likely to accept his protocol as a real treatment option for some of these chronic and mysterious illnesses that people are coming to them with. So at the beginning of the episode, I shared with you the long laundry list of symptoms that I had whenever I started the protocol. I'll share those one more time in case you forgot, because I wrote them down. So on March 6th, I wrote down all of the symptoms that I was having in my body: insomnia, anxiety, brain fog, heart palpitations, food intolerances, dizziness when standing, low progesterone, PMS, salt cravings, asthma, allergies, varicose veins, low sex drive, pelvic floor dysfunction, and frequent urination. Now, almost exactly 2 years later, the symptoms that I have left are some brain fog. I still have low sex drive. However, I'm less inclined to blame my nervous system now and more inclined to see that I need to seek sexual healing. Just like in my, it definitely is in my nervous system, but I don't think it's in my nervous system in a, it's manifesting physically, but it's like an emotional component. So I'm not saying that I don't think nervous system work is important for that, but I think that I need to work with a sexual coach or a sexual therapist to help me with some of the mental blocks that I have that aren't necessarily nervous system related. So still some brain fog, still low sex drive, and then allergies and asthma. I still have those things. But compared to the list that I had before, that is absolutely incredible. And honestly, I can put up with this kind of stuff if I'm not having crazy anxiety, if I'm not like hungry all the time, if I'm not having PMS, if I feel like my hormones are more balanced, if I'm sleeping. Like, I can deal with some brain fog and a low sex drive and allergies and asthma. And the allergies and asthma piece for me has always been a mystery, because I never had allergies or asthma until I moved to Minnesota. And I had my first asthma attack in December of 2015. And I didn't even know it was an asthma attack, but I had been outside sledding and playing with the kids in the cold. And I just noticed that walking up the hill to go sledding was like really hard for me. And I was, wow, I must be super out of shape or something. Like, this is awful. But then I went back inside and the breathing part was still really difficult. And I felt like I just couldn't catch my breath. And it felt like my breath was really labored. And after a day or so, it went away, it cleared up, and it kept happening. And then I went and saw my naturopath, and she was like, Lindsay, I think you need an inhaler. And it's actually been really difficult for me to accept that I have this asthma symptom, because I think it's so weird that I never had it until I was like 32 years old. But for now, my allergies and asthma are under control, and I take a prescription antihistamine every day, and that helps me so much. And right now, I'm completely okay with that. I don't have side effects from it. It works really well for me. I process it fine with my weird genetic mutations. It's cheap. It's easy. It's a drug. It's called hydroxyzine. It's been on the market for ages and ages. It's now mostly used for like anxiety and sleep, but it doesn't make me sleepy. And I don't feel like it really, I don't really have anxiety anymore. So I don't really feel like it helps or mitigates that at all. But it does help, because before I started taking it on a daily basis, my ears itched constantly, my throat itched constantly, I would have sneezing fits, and my asthma was worse. And ever since I started taking the hydroxyzine daily, I take a low dose, 100 milligrams a day. Ever since I started that, I don't have itchiness in my ears or throat. I don't have sneezing fits anymore. And I have to use my inhaler like way less. Typically in the summertime, I don't need to use my inhaler at all. I use my inhaler the most, like in December and January, and cold weather is a trigger for my asthma as well. So there's my story. 5 symptoms compared to the 15 symptoms. So it's very, very worth it to me to continue the protocol. And if you have any questions about it, I'm more than happy to answer them. I know that this was a lot of information, and it was way more scientific than a lot of my podcasts are. So I hope that you found this helpful and supportive. And I look into Dr. Nemechek's book, look into his website. I'll link to both below. I'll also link to his YouTube channel. If this is interesting to you, or if like you're feeling that full body yes as I'm saying this because it's resonating with you so much, then I think that's an invitation from the universe to include this in your healing journey. And using this protocol to reduce brain inflammation combined with the bottom up work of nervous system hygiene and nervous system regulation, to me, is like the magic formula for trauma healing and nervous system healing. So I love the Nemechek protocol. I'm so grateful that my friend Linda introduced me to it. Her granddaughter now is doing so well. She has gotten all of her developmental milestones back, plus some. She's now reading, and it took Linda a little while, but after almost 2 years on the protocol, she is now sleeping all night, every night. 20 plus years of chronic, awful, debilitating insomnia. So lots of success stories, excuse me. And if you're interested, I'm not on Facebook anymore, but whenever I first started the protocol, I was on Facebook, and there is a wonderful support group for adults with autonomic nervous system dysfunction on the Nemechek protocol. There's also an amazing support group if you have a child with autism, ADD, ADHD, or other sensory or developmental issues. There is a support group on Facebook for that as well. I cannot remember the name of it. It may just be called the Nemechek Protocol Support Group. I'm really not sure. But both of those groups are going to be really helpful. The admins are amazing and so knowledgeable and can help you get started in the protocol. You don't need to see Dr. Nemechek to start the protocol. That's why he wrote his book, so that people could start the protocol for themselves. And the only reason you'll need a doctor is to write a prescription for rifaximin. Interestingly, rifaximin, he uses it always in adults, usually like kids 10 years and older, but definitely in all adults, they have to take rifaximin. But in toddlers, babies, little kids, he uses a prebiotic called inulin, usually like a quarter to a half a teaspoon a day, to feed the good bacteria in the gut and starve the lower intestine bacteria in the small intestine. So if that wasn't confusing and your mouth isn't, or your head isn't completely like exploding with all of this information, check out the links below where you're going to find even more information if this is a rabbit hole that you want to go down. And I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode, and I will talk to you next month.